Hello and welcome to our weekly podcast, The World Outside. I'm Maha Siddiqui, and this week on our podcast, we have former Ambassador Rajiv Dogra. Welcome, Ambassador Dogra.
Thank you.
So let's start with the spate of protests that we are seeing in solidarity with farmers' protests outside of India. A massive gathering outside the Indian High Commission in London as well. In the past, there has been discomfort over such protests, which we saw regarding Article 370. Do you see this creating some friction again, as it has with Canada?
Well, I think let's go back to even remoter past, because there have been many, many cases in our history of the last 70 years where we've had difficult situations and where we've handled them fairly well. Depending upon which country was the protest in and who were the protesters. There are two sides to the issue. One, whether we should reach out to the protesters, and second, whether we should reach out to the local government, in this case, England or Canada. I'll give you the example of mid-90s, when elements of Khalistani inclination who was still not convinced of the rationale of the Indian viewpoint, and they were particularly active in London. The present NSA and I were both ministers posted in our High Commission in London, and we decided that we must reach out to them, if necessary, debate with them openly on the issue, and try and convince not just them, but the larger community about the rightness of our argument and about where they needed to correct themselves. Because the movement itself had died down in Punjab, but it was still sort of the embers were still there in London because of some misguided information. So we did exactly that. We had an open debate on radio and some television channels, and we found that it was an extremely positive reaction, not just from the extremist leaders themselves, but also from the general public, because we could convince them with solid arguments, and the same method we applied with the government of UK. Initially, they had their reservations about human rights issues and so on. But when we explained the larger dimensions of how misinformation had, despite all their resources, misinformed them about the human rights issues, then they also came around to the view that they needed to change their lens or the prism with which they were viewing India and which they were viewing this issue. So similarly, I think there is a need to reach out even now, both in Canada and England, and explain our viewpoint and explain the rationale of what is happening and what government has done in terms of the legislation. But having said that, I must also point out that we should also be mindful of the flood of the negative reportage that is going on in the world, especially in the Western world, about the farmers' agitation. Repeatedly, I mean, be the governments of Canada or MPs of UK, and more particularly the UN Secretary General's office, have been conveying the same message as the media at large, be it New York Times or The Guardian or any of the other newspapers, that there is some need to allow peaceful protests to go on. And to listen to what the farmers' representatives are saying. So I think if that message is echoing all the time, then we in India also need to take that concern with a certain amount of seriousness and see if something cannot be done by way of course correction so that everyone feels satisfied that this government is responsive and India is responsive, not just to domestic opinion, but also to the opinion outside. The reason why I'm emphasizing opinion outside is that the effect of any negative publicity or negative reportage is not just limited to this issue. It has a spread effect. Any investor who wishes to set up an industry here or put up equity in some venture or the other would be affected by any negative news that comes out of India. So even tourism, for example, a tourist will think twice before coming to a country, and don't mean just India, but any country about which he hears a lot of negative news. So I think it is in our own interest to view this issue with the seriousness it deserves and to take a pause and reflect over what can be done, which reaches out not just to the people settled outside who are protesting outside our high commissions and consulate, but to the governments as well as, importantly, to the media, because media becomes a medium to reach out to the wider world in terms of investments, in terms of opinion, and in terms of relationship between India and rest of the world.
So, sir, in that sense, do you then think that after issuing a statement, after what Justin Trudeau, the Canadian Prime Minister, said about the issue, a summoning of the Canadian High Commissioner and issuing a warning that it could impact the ties between India and Canada was an overreaction on the Indian side?
Well, I think people sitting in South Block and now Jawaharlal Nehru Bhavan would know better as to the extent of provocation and the need for summoning the Canadian High Commissioner. I think that's par for the course. Any country would do that because Trudeau had no business interfering in what was purely a domestic matter. Indians settled outside may voice their opinion. That is a different issue because they are, after all, sons of the same soil. But for a foreign leader to put his finger where it hurts the other country, I think is most undiplomatic and is not called for at all. So I think India has done well in summoning the High Commissioner and telling him our reservations on the issue. But having said that, I think just summoning and threatening and so on are not going to make any difference. The important thing is that if we have given a warning, then what is the effect of that warning? Are we in a position to implement that warning and to make sure that this kind of behavior is not repeated by Canada? That is the issue that we have to seriously ponder before issuing the next warning.
Ambassador Dogra, how do you see these protests in general impacting ties diplomatically? We've seen friction being created between countries, between India and UK and Canada in the past as well over protests. Do these protests become a sore point in diplomacy? Was it similar in the past as well, or are we seeing more of this happening now?
Well, both UK and Canada have been particularly prone to this kind of protest and this kind of situation where it is just at the edge of the violence. In fact, I remember that once earlier, about 40 years back or so, there was such a situation, and the Indian High Commissioner at that point of time reached out to their counterparts in London and said, do you want rivers of blood to flow in London? So I think that message has to go out to both these governments that there is a limit and they have a responsibility to not just protect the property of the Indian state, in this case the High Commission and Consulates concerned, but also to ensure that this does not become a drama where the government, and in this case UK and Canadian governments, are mute spectators. After all, when the protests about Black Lives Matter happened in USA, the UK and Canada did not allow blacks of UK and Canada to come out and protest against the American embassies in those two countries. So there cannot be double standard in terms of dealing with the communities settled there, the immigrants settled there, and in some cases there might be a provocation and encouragement by third parties. I mean Pakistan. I mean, are England and Canada absolutely sure that ISI is not behind these protests in some way or the other, or is not delighted that the protests are shaping up the way they are? So it is in their own interest to see whether they should allow this mischief to go on.
So finally, I wanted your reaction also to the fact that the Prime Minister spoke with the French President Emmanuel Macron, and they both spoke about a wide range of issues, but specifically about Indo-Pacific as well. Do you see this region becoming, it has already, but becoming even more strategic for a lot many countries, looking at the manner in which China has been going about its hegemony in the region?
Well, absolutely. I think the situation that China is creating is a cause of concern for every major country in the world. And France and India are certainly in the major league. The second thing is that from time immemorial, the freedom of passage in high seas has been a given. No country has control over high seas. Now, that rule and that order of the world is something that China is seeking to tamper with. It wants to assert its control over South China Sea and to some extent over parts of Pacific as if they are its lake. Now, that the world cannot just tolerate and stand by as a mute spectator, because bulk of the international trade today passes through these oceans. So every country has a right to ensure that there is a free passage which is available to it, and that passage is not on the mercy of someone's whims or fancies. So to that extent, I think it is absolutely necessary for countries to come together and think of ways in which they can ensure that the right of passage exists as it has always existed. The second thing is that both France and India have common concerns in many, many areas. And in today's world, France as an important leader in Europe, and India, which has important stakes in the region, should consult with each other as frequently as possible and as much as possible. So I think since their views match and overlap, it is a welcome development that the Prime Minister of India and President of France are in touch, the latest conversation being one such.
Many thanks, Ambassador Dogra, for that insightful conversation. That's all that we have on The World Outside this week. We'll be back again next week. Many thanks.